And a guy who drives it through.
Hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's deep kick. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson, defenders backing off.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jane Buster, will go over today's disappointing 3-0 defeat at home to Hearts. We'll look back on the 2-1 victory over Ross County, review the transfer window of January, and we'll kind of just go over whatever else takes our fancy over the next hour or so. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers.
Good evening.
Jay, I'll start with yourself, and I suppose the best place is to start is today's game. And what was a frustrating afternoon, yet another frustrating afternoon at Fir Park, it must be said. The home forum this season has been very disappointing. 3-0 doesn't really tell the whole story of the game, but for me, the overriding message was that we weren't good enough. We were substandard. We were off the pace and possibly got what we deserved from the game.
I think maybe over the pace, Hearts probably deserved to win the game, not necessarily by three clear goals. I think the main disappointment for me was, having been in Dingwall on Tuesday, it was a good team performance on Tuesday. There was nothing particularly extravagant. There were no sort of standout world-class performances, but there were good, solid performances all over the park, from McManus, from Lasley, from Moult, McDonald, Cadden. And the team seemed to play really well in what was essentially a very basic 4-4-2. And that's not to say the shape today might not have worked had there not been a red card, had Tate not been injured, but it didn't look like the same team. For example, Cadden on Tuesday night was bringing a lot of kind of fancy footwork and nice little touches, and basically just looked like a player who thought that at every opportunity he could tear the left back to shreds. And that was during the game that, on many occasions, Ross County actually doubled up on him. Whereas today, he didn't look the same player. He didn't seem as positive as he was on Tuesday night. Some of his balls into the box were poorer. Obviously, that can happen to some players. But again, I wonder whether there's a mentality sort of issue there as well. Not with Cadden personally, but just with the team. As much as the formation itself could have worked, as much as it could have been a success had we kept 11 men on the park, when you're continually chopping and changing and you're bringing in, new players, for example, Ainsworth, who's been completely frozen out the side for weeks and looked to be on his way out, when you seem to be matching up based on the opposition rather than your own good quality players, I wonder if that starts to have an effect. Because at the end of the day, if you go into a home game against Hearts and you're a fan and you see the lineup today, I think most people probably reacted a little bit negatively. It looked a bit defensive on paper. And I think that starts to play into a bit of a fear factor, because it says that we aren't good enough to, go 4-4-2 or whatever and play our own game. We are continually matching up to the opposition when it is, we saw earlier in the month with Rangers, we've had it again with Hearts. And that becomes a frustration, because there's no settled team. Jules, who I thought was decent enough today, is suddenly just sort of fired in there. He looked a little bit edgy at times, which is understandable because it was his debut. As I said, Ainsworth was kind of brought into a team that a couple of weeks ago looked as though he was so far out of that even Joe Chalmers was ahead of him in the pecking order. We've brought in new players like Freer, etc. You know, Freer's been overlooked for Ainsworth on the left wing. For me, there are still a lot of questions in the way we approach the games, and that's disappointing. But the game itself, you know, all hinged on that red card. I'm sure we'll obviously talk about it. For me, it wasn't a red card. And unfortunately, when that happens, you're kind of automatically put in the back foot. And although in the second half we had a lot of possession, I think a lot of that was down to Hearts knowing that at 1-0 up, they could simply sit back, stay organised, let us pass the ball in front of their back line, and we were really struggling to do much with it. As I said earlier, 3-0 was a bit of a flattering score, I think, for Hearts, but you can't really, you know, legislate for losing two late goals when you're pushing forward with 10 men trying to get back in the game. You know, that's going to happen.
Buster, it's a difficult one, because you look at Mark McGee's starting 11 today, and the starting formation for me was very baffling. We then changed from a 5-3-2 to what seemed like a 4-4-2, and I think that's when Chrissy Cadden really get involved in the game. Stevie Hamill answers on a postcard as to where he was playing in the first half particularly. It just very, very confusing lineup. I had seen Jay made a comment before the game. He said, remember when Mark McGee's teams used to actually attack at home and look to win the game? For me, we'd seen, well, Mark McGee was at Partick Thistle versus St Johnstone Wednesday night. Again, answers on a postcard why he was at that game rather than looking at Hearts before we played them. We don't play Partick Thistle or St Johnstone this month, so I can't quite fathom why he would be at that game rather than watching our forthcoming opponents. That's strange right off the bat, but it just seemed that we gave Hearts far too much respect, and throughout the game, were Hearts that much better than us? Are they a superior side? They've brought in a lot of new players, they've been very unsettled, they've had some poor results. Yes, with the exception of Wednesday night was a fantastic night for Hearts and their supporters, but I just think that Mark McGee basically rolled over and let his belly get tickled today, and as a result we lost the game convincingly because we didn't look to win the game.
I'm not too sure it was as negative as you're making it sound, to be honest with you. As you say, the formation, you know, whatever we tried to match, fair enough. The only thing that confused me about the formation was where Lionel Ainsworth came from. You know, the days before, I was reading a few forums, Steelman Online, and people were saying, put Ainsworth up front, and I thought to myself, we can't do that, that's a stupid shite, and Mark McGee must have been reading it, because, you know, next thing I know, Ainsworth is playing up front.
In the first half, Hamill seemed to be playing the centre of the park.
No, you're saying it was a 5-3-2. I sort of tend to agree with, I think somebody told me what McGee said before the game, it was more like a 3-4-3, and I agree with that, because the three centre-halves sat, Tate and Hamill were playing sort of wide midfield, Chrissy Cadden was lost in the role he was supposed to be playing. I agree with you there, he was completely lost. For some reason, Lionel Ainsworth was playing centre-forward, and Liam Oak was sort of stuck in the left-hand side of the front three. That was completely baffling, you know, the inclusion of Ainsworth then meant Liam Oak was sort of floating it in the left. I don't honestly know what that was about, to be fair, but as you say, obviously when we were tracking back, Hamill and Tate dropped in and it became a five, you know, I think that was blatantly obvious, you know, what the plan behind the 3-4-3 sort of thing was. But I felt that until the sending off, we weren't putting a great account of ourselves forward, but we were matching them. You know, there was certainly nothing in the game at that point. And then when we went a man down, we're chasing the game through there, because obviously, as you say, we're a man down, we're a player short, we're going to be chasing the game, and ultimately, I think that's what over the piece lost it in the long run. But you know, who's to say we wouldn't have beat anyway over the 90 minutes? But as I say, that's something that we can't judge on, because we went a man down and we lost it, in my opinion, because of that.
Yeah, I mean, just to jump in here, I agree with everyone what's this kind of saying. The sort of comments before the game, well, I read that lineup before. Obviously, I was sitting in the Calf Park at the Civic Centre, so I wasn't, you know, hearing these comments on the TV and things like that. So my comment about, you know, previous Mark McGee sides and his first time around going out and looking to both teams away in attack, which I think is still a point, because we have been incredibly defensive under Mark McGee in the second time around, and it is a completely different, you know, outlook. Perhaps it might be because he doesn't think he's got the players, fair enough. But I think, you know, the point I made was when I thought we were looking at maybe a 5-4-1 rather than what I agree with Buster was, at least when we were in possession of the ball, a 3-4-3. Hamill, for me, did play on the left of midfield, and I thought he did a reasonable job. You know, I don't think he would perhaps have had the legs to last the 90 minutes anyway. If he hadn't been substituted for what I thought was maybe a tactical substitution, because we'd just been down to 10 men. But I thought it was a 3-4-3. And, you know, as Buster says, if we hadn't had a man sent off, then, you know, it may have worked. Again, I tend to agree with Buster. I think that my gripes with that, though, were the fact that you ended up with Louis Moult out on the left again. You know, we saw it against Rangers when we brought on McMillan and played him at left mid, and because McMillan is not a left midfielder, he's not got a left foot, it meant that Moult was having to come out there to give us any sort of creativity in the left, which then meant there was nobody to really aim for in the box. And so if you go with three up front with sort of two wingers and still have Moult doing that, then it completely, you know, negates the point in having your top goal scorer in the middle of that front three. So that was disappointing, and I agree that Cadden, you know, was lost out there. But I certainly agree with Buster. I don't think it's quite as defensive or as negative as maybe you perhaps saw the game, Sparra. And to be honest, I think that the game changed maybe a wee bit before the sending off. For me, it's the sort of the our outlook in the game seemed to change when Tate went off injured. It's not a slight on McMillan by any means. I thought he had a decent enough game, full of energy, looking to get forward. But for me, we seemed to kind of just drop a little bit further back and drop a little bit deeper with McMillan on the right rather than Tate. And I think that's when we started to allow Hearts more into the game. Because I think before then, I think we looked the more positive. I think we looked, you know, it did look as though the 3-4-3 might actually be onto something, but unfortunately, you know, the injury to Tate and the, you know, the sending off, we just couldn't cope with it, and, you know, unfortunately, things just kind of went from bad to worse.
It can't be argued, though, on the other hand, that our home results against the teams that are, or the so-called bigger teams, have been absolutely pathetic this season. But you look at the teams above us in the league, I don't think we've taken any points from any of the teams above us in the league this season. That is,
that's why they're above us in the league.
It's completely horrendous. So at the Firth Park, we talked last season about the importance of our home games and the points we took, and I think the points that we took last season towards particularly the business end of the season were the points that kept us up. Yes, we did end up in the top six, but it's very much like last season where you could throw a blanket over the bottom six or seven sides. We just seem to give and afford the opposition far too much respect this season, and Hearts have now taken 9 goals of us over 3 games. We've only scored 1 in reply. That was a James McFadden 91st minute free kick in the first game at Firth Park. It's a pretty poor return.
No, absolutely. I mean, as I said before, I think that there is an argument. You know, the point that I made before the game about, you know, the 2007 Mark McGee and the 2017 Mark McGee, I think is a credible point. And, you know, we do seem, I don't know whether Mark McGee, just as he's got older, has got more cautious or, you know, as I said, maybe he doesn't think he's got the players. But then you could argue that, you know, a team that had Stephen McGarry in it, you know, and Jim Patterson, guys like that, guys who were decent enough players, but Mark McGee turned them into good attacking players. You know, when you look at the team we've got now, is Stephen McGarry and Jim Patterson really far and away ahead of the sort of ability we have in the team just now? I'm not sure it is. So it does appear that Mark McGee in his second spell is far more cautious, seems far more worried about the opposition. When you're going into games, you know, against the sides that, you know, like Aberdeen, like Hearts, like Rangers, we do give them far too much respect. I agree with that. Obviously, you know, every team, any manager worth his salt will identify threats and look to combat those, whether it's a wee change here or there or doubling up on a winger or whatever it is. But what we tend to see is wholesale changes when we're playing against teams. And obviously, I have no kind of idea of what how the players react to that or what the feeling is in the changing rooms. But, you know, I think there's a risk there that if you're playing for a football team, and you're confident and you look around you and you think you've got a decent, you know, decent teammates and you're, you know, confident in your own abilities to go out and score goals. If every time you are up against a reasonable side, you find that your manager seems more concerned with the opposition than what you can personally do as a footballer and as a football team, I think that almost creates a fear factor when at times there doesn't need to be one. We've seen it against Rangers, you know, last week. And again, today I'm not so sure with the, you know, how the three might have ended up sending off. And of course there was a sending off last week against Rangers, but it just seems as though we're almost creating a fear factor ourselves when there doesn't need to be one. And, you know, the changes we make are erratic at times. And I genuinely don't know if you could say we've got anything close to a settled side now. We seem to get on the verge of having, you know, a 4-4-2 that seemed quite settled. And that seems to have been ripped up, you know, and started again for 2017. And I don't see how that can be good. It certainly can't be good for the younger players. We've seen, you know, two different sides, I think, over the last 5 days of somebody like Chrissy Cadden, which isn't good for him. Louis Moult is obviously not a left winger, and yet he's continually dragged out there. I would like to see us start to have more confidence in our own ability and our own team and what we can do. And then, yes, make changes in terms of, you know, isolating specific threats of the opposition. But we just seem to be in awe of teams like Hearts when we play them now. And as much as I think Mark McGee, you know, got it right, Ross County, it's certainly not an excuse to have a go at Mark McGee. And as I've said today, there were so many changes out with, so many factors out with his control that it's hard to make a serious judgment overall. But for me, there is an underlying issue that Mark McGee seems far, far too cautious this time around. And it costs us far more than it seems to benefit us.
I think that we've got problems in our midfield. Considering we've just brought in Pearson and a left midfielder, I'd hope to think that Elliot Freer is good enough to actually play left midfield, because I don't see anything in Lee Lucas or Craig Clay that, you know, that fills me with any sort of confidence. Every time they play, they just seem to be there for the sake of being there. I didn't see nothing today for Lucas when he came on. I know he's had one or two good games when I was there, apparently, but every time I see him, he offers nothing, I don't think. And the last time I seen him was when he lunged in against... That was the only red card that I've seen. It was worthy of a red card this year, when he lunged in against the Hamilton player. Craig Clay, again, for me, he's there and he does have decent games, but he very rarely goes past decent. I think quite a lot of times he's anonymous. So I'm hoping that Freer can come in, play left midfield, Pearson can come in and play in the middle, way make sure Lasley, and then, as you say, maybe Cadden on the right, but maybe settle it a flat 4-4-2. But I think we've got big problems in that midfield, and that's where our problems have been all season, I think.
Well, I don't think it can be any coincidence that we've brought in an abundance of central midfielders, kind of almost trying to paper over the cracks. I heard Craig Kennedy say after the game today that Lee Lucas was like a poor man's Ross Forbes. And to be honest, his contribution today was very questionable, but I still kind of, I do rate him. I think there's more there to be unearthed, but it just certainly wasn't evident today, I thought. As well, another big issue, Jay, was our decision-making. You look at the build-up to the Hearts' second goal. We're actually up the park. The ball's rolled across the edge of the Hearts' penalty box. Stephen Pearson decides to pass rather than putting his laces through the ball and having a shot on goal. Hearts break away, and about 20 seconds later, it's 2-0 for Hearts. You can't really, as a manager, you can't really compensate for your players making poor decisions on the park during that 90 minutes, can you?
No, absolutely not. You know, as I said earlier, there are factors in today's game that are completely out with Mark McGee's control. And a lot of what we're talking about here is, you know, speculative. What ifs? Tate going off would have been a big blow to McGee's game plan. The red card, of course. And you're right, there were aspects of, you know, even the third goal, Jules has you know, tried to clear it. Bit of bad luck and they make it three. So, you know, I think that's where a lot of frustration comes from, because you're looking at the scoreline and you're seeing that we've been horsed 3-0 by Hearts. And I just don't think there was three goals in it. As I said earlier, Hearts winning, I think over the piece, they will feel that they won deservedly so. But, you know, the first goal is a deflection, a ridiculous deflection. It's one of those ones that you look at and just think, you know, you see quite a lot, and it just seems that every time that's hit, you know, it drops so perfectly into the net. It's unreal. The second one, you know, as you said, maybe a little bit of poor decision making. At times it did feel as though we were trying to walk the ball into the net, other than, you know, going for it when there was a slight window of opportunity. And then the third goal is obviously, you know, unlucky or a mistake from Jules. I didn't get quite a clear view of it, so we need to see that back. But there's three goals that on another day you could possibly prevent. So, yeah, that is, you know, the kind of thing that a manager like Mark McGee will be watching and will know that he has absolutely no impact on. Again, though, you know, does it come down to the idea of a fear factor or the mentality that we're playing against a really good side at heart, so there isn't perhaps the confidence to have a shot when it presents itself? You know, those are the kind of questions that nobody can really answer, but obviously throw up good conversation points for the likes of podcasts and forums.
Yeah, it's a hard one to kind of go over. I'm frustrated with the manager in the back of today's result, but at the same time, we're just about to go and look back and what was a fantastic win midweek at Ross County, a result that could prove very significant, Buster, over the course of the season. It's just, I guess the frustration comes down to the fact that we can't string two results together at any point. We just kind of go from sugar to shite, basically, over the course of the season, and we can't seem to find answers for that. You've got a team that won. I know Scott McDonald was suspended. I know the significance that Mark McGee places in Scott McDonald on the team, based on previous interviews that he's had. Did Mark McGee kind of panic react to the absence of McDonald today and try and come up with some sort of miracle formula to solve the problem? Because it's hard to fathom, it's hard to work out what the manager's mentality was, because you've got a team there that are full of confidence after a great win midweek, and you make these wholesale changes for the game on the Saturday. It makes no sense in a league that is so tight.
I think there's a couple of things there. I think, as you say, the key to us maybe getting one or two results in the, well, two or three results in the bounce is going to be being able to keep it consistent. As you says, you know, some changes were forced upon us. I also don't think it was any surprise to MD that, you know, Zach Jules was brought in as well. I don't know why, but everybody was always sort of expecting him to play. So it wasn't really a surprise when the team was announced, to be honest with you, because I thought we'd maybe go to a back five. But again, I don't know if you can. Fair dues, we lost, and you know the result didn't go the manager's way, and that's exactly you know, what managers are judged on. But I think it's a bit hard to question the tactics when, you know, they were doing no too bad before we went a man down, basically. As I say, Hart started well. We were a wee bit on the back foot, but I felt we were coming more and more into it. And, you know, whether or not it was, as you say, when Tate went off or when the red card, you know, as I say, whatever one of them sort of triggered the, you know, the change, basically, it's a bit hard to, you know, to put this result down to the manager's changing of the tactics. But I do agree that, again, hopefully we can get, as I go back to the point I made in the midfield, if we can get a settled midfield, Scott McDonald and Ollie Moult up front, you know, and a settled back four, it's the results, you know, will come 2-3 at a time if we can, especially when we're playing teams around about us. If we can get a settled, consistent team, we're going to get a couple of consistent results, I think. But I think it's a bit harsh to judge the manager's decision making today when it was going no too bad before it did go pear shaped when we lost a man.
Yeah, I think that recording quite soon after a game as well is quite difficult because it is kind of raw, and you look at the result on paper and it's much worse than it is in reality for me. But Jay, you were the only one of the three of us that was at Dingwall on Tuesday night, and that was a much more positive result, 2-1, and it seemed like a pretty comfortable 2-1. I know that we were pegged back shortly after scoring the opening goal, but Lou Moult scored kind of 10 minutes into the second half, and we held out fairly comfortable by all accounts.
I'm not sure about comfortable, but it's amazing what happens when you don't have a dodgy referee, you know, sending someone off. So, you know, we'll remember to come back and talk about the sending off the day sparrow before we move on completely. But the Ross County game, I thought, as I said earlier, it was a team performance. Nobody really stood out massively for me. Samson had a couple of good saves. McManus threw his body in the line a couple of times. Lasley, I think, had one of his best games this season. Both McHugh and Lasley, you know, in the middle. Lasley, you know, gets stuck in. We know he does anyway. But McHugh, you know, he's tackling when it's kind of allowed, is fantastic. So the two of them were really effective in the middle. As I said earlier, I thought Cadden was different class on Tuesday. He just looked so positive and so determined to go at the left back. And as I said earlier, he was also introducing some really, really good footwork. I think there was only one move that you kind of saw in both the MFC TV highlights and the BBC highlights that showed that. But there was a few moments where he just looked so full of confidence and so positive. And I think overall, well, you know, I suppose it's one of those ones where a draw perhaps may have been the best outcome when you consider some of the chances County had late on. But, you know, from a Motherwell point of view, for the effort that we put in, for the team performance as a whole, and for the fact that we took our chances and we exploited a couple of mistakes from the County defence, I think we were worth our win. And it was a good win. It's a difficult place to go. We talk about how difficult the league is in terms of how tight it is. When you're going away from home to somewhere like Dingwall on a freezing cold Tuesday night, it's a really difficult place to come away from, even with a point. So to get all three was fantastic. And as you said earlier, the kind of the sugar and shite idea, you know, having been to Dingwall on Tuesday and then there today and Saturday, that is that kind of up and down bipolar set of emotion. And it's difficult to get out of. You know, we are in a really inconsistent patch at the moment, or all season. And I suppose there is an argument, you know, as you said earlier, there is an argument that if the team selection is as inconsistent as it seems to be, the only thing you can really pair that up with, in terms of stats and in terms of, you know, hard proof, is the fact that the results have been completely inconsistent. Now, whether that means that a consistent lineup would bring about consistent results, you know, who knows? But it is quite frustrating, particularly when you come away from a game like on Tuesday and you feel as though you've seen a good team performance, and then you get to the Saturday and the team's completely changed.
Yeah, it's just kind of, it just almost kind of feels like any time we do get a positive result, then the manager seems to be overthinking things. I know that in the back of a 3-0 home defeat, and a manager that isn't the most popular figures as it is, the knives will be out and the blame will be placed at his door. But I don't really think that that's completely fair in this instance. But I do think that Mark McGee at times is overthinking things and trying to maybe complicate things a bit more for himself than he really needs to. But we move on, and I guess that the week's break now, Busta, is going to be quite significant. We're going to very much the business end of the season. We could end up in the top six, given the way the results are going. Everyone's taking points off everyone else, particularly around these seven teams that we refer to regularly in the podcast. I'm looking at the fixtures. You'll have Aberdeen away in the 15th, then Celtic away, and then that game against Dundee at Fir Park on the 25th of February. That's now looking like a massive game, isn't it?
Well, we're coming into we're in the middle of a tough run of fixtures there. You know, the 3 points up in Dingwall was vital. Absolutely vital. You know, as Jay says, as you had said before, sorry, you know, it was something that we definitely needed, or, you know, this would look twice as worse as it does. You're talking about, you know, as we could end up in the top six. I'm looking at the league just now, and as far as I can see, I think we're still in the top six. Got the best goal difference between ourselves, Ross County and Kilmarnock. But it's going to be tough. A couple of, as you say, hard fixtures coming up. Is it the Scottish Cup next weekend? Is that why we're off? Sorry, aye. I thought so, unfortunately. So it's, you know, it's going to be hard, but it's one of those things where, you know, the 3 points could come through one of the unexpected fixtures, whether that be Aberdeen away or Celtic away. I know it's very, very unlikely, but it's one of those things that I would never say never, but I don't, again, because you're the, you know, the inconsistencies in the team and suspensions and possible suspensions and things like that, I don't know who's going to be in these teams. I don't know how we're going to be. We take a week off, we come back, we're on a different team at times. The season, in my opinion, has been so stop-start, it's been unreal. There's breaks for everything these days, international games every so often. Just, you know, we had a winter break for some reason when it was the mildest winter we've had in probably 20 years. So, again, I don't really care who the fixtures are against. I think they're all going to be pretty vital, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Jay, there's no easy fixtures coming up, but you look at Aberdeen away, Celtic away, it's hard to see, particularly on the basis of watching us today, where we're going to get anything from these two games.
Well, yeah, I mean, we said before the Ross County game that it was so massive because the games after it were going to be really difficult. I suppose, you know, maybe rummaging around looking for positives, but I suppose if you're going to have the kind of bad luck that we've had in the last two games with ridiculous sending offs, then you might as well have them, you know, for the games that perhaps you don't expect to get anything from. I think as much as we... well, actually, I'm not sure, you know, what the opinions are, and because I actually saw stuff on Steelman online and on Twitter that seems that there's a couple of Motherwell fans out there that thought it was a red card today, which I was really, really surprised about. But, you know, I don't foresee that, you know, we will appeal it, and I don't foresee that that will be overturned, not because it wasn't a red card, but just because, you know, nowadays slow motion replays and you know, carefully taken photographs paint this picture that just wasn't there.
Sorry to interrupt there, but that's exactly the problem here. I've seen a picture of McHugh, the ball's a wee bit to the left, and, you know, he's got his foot on the boy's ankle. Now, unfortunately, his foot came into touch with the boy's ankle. This was after he'd won the ball. He was favourite to win the ball. He got there on a slide tackle on the ground and then kicked the guy in a 50-50. Again, as you say, the slow motion, the perfectly timed photos, this is what's going on at Shaggers, basically, and that red card today was an absolute disgrace, in my opinion. Fitba's deed to me. If that's how it's gone, Fitba is deed to me.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, you're spot on, and I think it gets a wee bit more gone as well when, you know, I can't remember his name. I think, is it Mark Donaldson or something like that from ESPN had kind of put up that photo and said, you know, quoted Mark McGee saying that it was an embarrassing red card, shown that photo and said something like, you know, are you sure, Mark? As though that photo is somehow, you know, evidence that it was a red card. And folk were replying, saying, oh, you know, what a ridiculous challenge. Because when you look at that photo, it looks as though the ball's 5 yards away, McHugh's nowhere near it, and he's broken Don Cowie's ankle. That's not how football works. Anybody who goes to football knows that, you know, even that hard, you know, a hard slide tackle that is won, you know, the ball is won perfectly, it happens every week. If you take the photo at the right moment, you can make it look really bad. Consider when two players go for the ball, one gets there first and the other one kicks the other's, you know, studs. And it can be a really sore one. But unless it's a high foot, it's not a, you know, it's not a foul. And yet if you took the photo at the right moment, it would look as though the opposition player was stamping on the other player. It's a nonsense. And when you have journalists like the guy from ESPN sharing it as proof that it's a red card, I would question whether he's even seen it, you know, in real time, because for me, it's just not a red card. He wins the ball cleanly, and yes, there's a follow-through, but you can't legislate for that. There are follow-throughs. It's a contact sport. Okay, it's not a particularly nice follow-through, but players will get injured because of follow-throughs. You know, and as soon as you start going down that line, where do you end the kind of the idea that players could be sent off for that? So if someone goes for an honest challenge, but their momentum or gravity or whatever it is, you know, makes, you know, a decision like that possible, where do you draw the line? Are we going to start, you know, if a player goes up for a header, wins it fantastically, but his momentum brings him down on someone, is that a red card? Because as much as a red card than that today, if someone goes up for a header and the player they're going up with falls and the gravity brings the defender back down and he, you know, accidentally stamps on the other player simply because of gravity and because of the freak nature of what's happened, that will now be a red card if you're applying the same logic as what happened today. Because it's not possible to go for the tackle that Carroll McHugh went for without, you know, his body and his foot being in that position. And unfortunately, Don Cowie was on the end of it. And we seem so determined to turn every contact into a decision that has to be made, into a red card, into a booking, that we fail to realise that sometimes players can get knocks, can get injured, can get a gash in their shin, just because it's a contact sport. There are, you know, 22 guys running about there. A lot of them are committed footballers going in for tackles. Yes, there's a bit of determination. Yes, there's a bit of aggression. They've all got studs on their, you know, on their boots. You know, there's a reason players wear shin guards. And you're kind of eradicating that whole aspect of the game if you're going to accept that today's was a red card. And for me, it just wasn't. And as I said earlier, and as you said, Buster, for me, we are in at the age of the sort of trial by sports scene. Anybody who saw that photo thinks that Carroll McHugh went out for a leg breaker today. And when you slow down replays and things like that, it looks worse than it really did. And that will come into factors, whether they claim it doesn't or not. The folk who make the decision on these kind of appeals will have seen all that and will have a predetermined idea of what the tackle was like and will not take the basic facts into consideration. So we will appeal it and we will rightfully appeal it. I perhaps didn't agree with everything Mark McGee said in the radio in terms of the game. I don't think we were the better team. We perhaps maybe edged it before this, or before Tate went off injured. But there's a lot of what Mark McGee says I don't agree with. And sometimes I don't agree with the way he said it. But I thought he was perfectly justified to call out what was a poor, poor decision that's cost us. And that's the worry for me. If Andrew Dallas has not seen Carroll McHugh win the ball, then it makes him inadequate because he should be seeing it. But if he didn't see him win the ball and thought that it was, you know, a terrible tackle and he didn't win the ball, then that's one thing. But if Andrew Dallas genuinely sent him off because even after he won the ball, his momentum then took him into the player, then Buster's completely right. The game is an absolute bogey because you then exclude all of the tough tackling players immediately out of the game. You can't have midfielders going in for tackles anymore just in case they, you know, their momentum takes them through, because there was nothing aggressive, there was nothing, you know, There was no intent there from Carroll Q. It was simply, you know, where Don Cowie seemed to be. It was simply, you know, the logical, physical aspect of going for that ball. He couldn't have went for it any other way. And if you're sending players off for that, then there is no point in having midfield battles or tough tackling defenders or, you know, the central midfielder who gets stuck in. You need to completely eradicate those types of players for the game. And that's not a game of football I would be particularly interested in watching.
So I think your question...
That was an absolute massive element of the game that I did overlook, and I must confess that was because it felt like it was about -7 and I was waiting in the queue for a hot chocolate, which when I finally got to the front of the queue there was no hot chocolates left, which was a rather disappointing moment in my day. But
I can't believe we didn't talk about that then.
I must have had Ryan Murn came and sat beside us for 10 minutes in the first half, and everything was going rosy at that point because it was 0-0, the game was okay, and the wind hadn't quite reached the levels that it did kind of midway through the first half to the start of the second half, where it was one of the coldest I've been at Firth Park in quite some time. My 5-year-old girl was really struggling, but we get through, and she's serving her apprenticeship. She's going to need to suffer before she gets to kind of my stage where you actually enjoy or you kind of look forward to going to the football, which is quite a worrying situation given how rubbish it was today. But for me, the situation with McHugh, we're taking a lot of the competitiveness out of football. It's almost moving away from being a contact sport. With you'd be as well outlawing slide tackles with the way that the referee was so quick to draw the red card today. Is that the way the game's going? There's so much play acting and cheating and everything else. I don't want to go on a rant against modern day football, but that's a horrendous decision. What I was more concerned about was the fact that I saw our own supporters in the club Facebook page and the club Twitter page putting up a screenshot of the point of contact with McHugh's tackle as justification for him being sent off. For me, every day of the week, that's a warning and maybe a yellow card at worst. A straight red is a ridiculous
thing. I don't think it was a foul. I don't even think it was a foul. Don't get me wrong, as I say, he connected with the boy. He's you know, hurt the boy's ankles, Don Cowie. He's took Don Cowie's ankle. This is a good half a second, well, probably a bit quicker than that, but you know how it is. As Jay says, his momentum's taking him in there. He's won the ball. He's went through the ball, as he's supposed to do, and his momentum's took him into Don Cowie's ankle. Now, again, Don Cowie's come in there committed as well. Two of them went in 50-50. Our player won the ball. He didn't go in lunging. He didn't go in studs high. He went in there, kicked the ball, and then, as I say, unfortunately caught the player as well. Now, as we say, you can get this point perfect picture where it shows you, you know, the ball's 2 yards to the left because it's been kicked, and you know his studs are sitting in his ankle bone. It's unfortunate that happens. I'm not a big fan of the whole it's a contact sport thing, but unfortunately,
that's such a vital element of it. Is it there should be many challenges and everything else. We like to see that, and a contact sport does mean that you can actually commit to a slide tackle without running the risk of being sent off. A meaty challenge. And to be honest, any time there seems to be a kind of challenge where there's a bit of full-bloodedness about it, there's someone in the end of a sending off straight away. The referee could not wait to get his card out of his pocket today.
I don't disagree with it. As I say, and you go, sorry, Jay.
I was actually just going to say, I mean, Barra mentions this, that the photograph that we've obviously all seen, I've got a real, real issue with that. Whether it's our own fans using it bizarrely to justify our own man getting sent off, or it's journalists on Twitter, or it's opposition fans, whoever it is, there is absolutely no logic whatsoever to a still of a tackle. If you go and have a look, every time there's a Motherwell game, you of course have the Motherwell website and plenty of other websites post up photographs from the match action. If you scroll through those on a regular basis, you will find, you know, photos that look as though there's been, like, you know, a knee-high tackle or, you know, quite a dangerous one. In fact, if you go into a Google image search and just search slide tackle, you will find, you know, photos of what were at the time perfectly good slide tackles that nobody had, you know, blinked an eye at. But when they are freeze-framed in that one moment in time, are made to look, you know, ridiculous. I've got a real problem with that because it is a big, big problem in the game. As we said earlier, it's like trial by sport scene. Once you see that photo, you know, what can be, what is seen can't be unseen. Once you see that photo and you think, oh, that's a shocker, that then does not leave your brain. And if you're the kind of person that is then, you know, given the task of judging appeals and things like that, your judgment is clouded. What happened today was a meaty, perhaps aggressive, but perfectly fair challenge by Carroll McHugh. His momentum, unfortunately, could have caused an injury to Don Cowie. That happens. It's happened plenty of times in football up until now, and it will happen plenty of times in the future. But as soon as you start sending people off for that, that is going to ruin the game. But particularly when you then have people justifying it by using photographs, I just find that complete nonsense. And it's a worrying trend because, you know, we can all take a photo and say, oh, well, that means that. It's an absolute nonsense. And it's actually kind of really annoyed me today because what we saw was a good meaty challenge. And don't get me wrong, if you are the sort of person who believes that someone should be sent off for the follow-through, I will disagree with you. I don't think that is completely correct. But I will at least respect your opinion if you're evaluating the challenge as a whole. But if you're basing your opinion or you're using on that photo or you're using that photo to justify the sending off, then for me that is complete and utter nonsense.
Well, I'm kind of looking at the kind of culprits that I was mentioning earlier on and the actual line that goes with it. And to be fair, it's someone that retweets and anything that the Motherwell Football Club Twitter ever posts, so they should be able to kind of pick up on it. He's already replied to my reply, and I only posted it 20 seconds ago. Saying if it wasn't a red card, then how anyone could argue, I don't know. It's just such a baffling statement based on one picture. See, to be fair, I could have showed any angle of any challenge and any point of a game that looked incriminating and everything else, but that's not... We're not going through trial by basically Canon camera. It's not trial by sports scene, because at least they actually show video of the build-up to the challenge and then the aftermath. This is just one freeze frame of something that happened over a period of, 20 seconds.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, football is all about opinions. There will be people who think that's a red card, and they are perfectly entitled to do so. I would completely and utterly disagree with that. But at least if your opinion's based on the tackle itself, that's fair enough. But the actual photograph, it's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. You know, it's taken after the fact. You know, so what actually, the tackle, you're judging it on the tackle. So it's taken after the fact of the tackle. As was said earlier, it doesn't look as though the ball's anywhere near it. It looks as though McHugh has came in, you know, 30 seconds too late and has almost ended Don Cowie's career. I mean, it's an absolute farce. I mean, anybody who wants to sit and look through match photos after every game could probably create an alternative match report purely based on what you could make photos look like what happened rather than what actually happened. And it's quite disappointing when it's your own fans that are doing it. Particularly when it's a player like Carroll McHugh, because Carroll McHugh, I think, is going to be a fantastic player for Motherwell. I think we have already seen him do what he does best, and part of his game is to be a tough tackling midfielder. And if you're going to send off players for tough tackling, what happens in the aftermath, purely out with their control, because of gravity and because of momentum and because of the freak nature of football, if you're going to send players off for that, then there is absolutely no point in us having signed Carroll McHugh, because being an aggressive tackler is what he does, and if that is what we're sending players off now, then he is going to get sent off a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what really annoys me about the picture? The close proximity of the referee to the challenge. He is yards away from the challenge. And
well, keep in mind, this is the referee that booked the French boy for Hearts because Lionel Ainsworth tripped up Louis Moult. I mean, let's not pretend like he's a fantastic referee. It's the same guy who was clearly fast-tracked because of who his dad is rather than because of any competence that he's shown. We had the whole section of the East Stand in utter hysterics when that Martin, or whatever his name is, the number 88 for Hearts, was getting booked because Louis Moult fell over Lionel Ainsworth's leg. So let's not pretend like, you know, the proximity of the referee means he should have got it right, because, you know,
no,
I think it should mean it should. Oh, no, I mean, yeah,
but obviously, of course,
but we're talking about an incompetent referee who has shown on more than one occasion today that his position doesn't have any reflection on his ability to call the right decision.
No disagreements there. The transfer window, we'll quite a look at that before we finish up. Buster, Stephen Pearson arrived just after the close of the window, but a very good acquisition, I'm sure we'll all agree there. Possibly the kind of headline news from the transfer window in terms of a Motherwell point of view was the fact that we retained the services of Louis Moult. There was rumours that Scott McDonald may be on his way as well. Nadir Chiefgee was linked to the club, but it looked like it was maybe going to be Chiefgee in, McDonald out, but in the end, McDonald stays as well. Chiefgee didn't arrive. Pearson arrives, and Louis Moult stays. It's as far as the transfer window goes, I would say that it was a very productive one and a very positive one from a Motherwell point of view.
Yeah, you know, as you say,
we're
a couple of players that were
brought in, fantastic. A couple of young players went out on loan. You know, after the Project Brave stuff and how you earn your points for that, it's good to see the club maybe having a look at that as well. And as you say, I spoke to Flo after, Alan Burrows, after the window sort of closed, and you know, he's basically said that there was a couple of poor offers for Louis Moult, nowhere near the valuation, so we immediately rejected them. And as you say, he said that the club have said to Scott McDonald, "You're not going anywhere at the moment. We can't get a replacement in for you, so you're staying." And you know, and he's happy with that as well, apparently. So to retain Scott McDonald and Louis Moult in a window where the two of them could possibly have left is fantastic business by the club. You know, I think we'll probably see the last couple of months of Scott McDonald before he heads home to Australia, but it looks like, you know, that's twice now he's been linked with him, twice he sort of wanted to go. So we'll probably see his last couple of months in Scottish football before he goes back home. Louis Moult is fantastic. He even, you know, the day, for example, he's running left, he's running right, he's the one actually trying to make the chances, which is unfortunate for us because we'd rather he was on the end of them. But he's a fantastic player, and you know, it's great we managed to keep hold of him, and we were in a position to knock back bids for him. You know, it could be that the club maybe didn't have the financial footing they've got at the moment, and we maybe had to accept one of the sort of poorer offers. But you know, we've been able to knock them back at the moment. He's got a wee bit to run in his contract, so hopefully, for our sakes and for his sake as well, progression of his career, you know, hopefully we can move him on the summer for quite a lot of money and he picks up a hefty wage rise. But it'll be good to see Piro back once he gets a wee bit of training under his belt. I don't know exactly what he's been doing. I think he was injured for a wee bit after he come back from India as well, so it'll be good to see him in there. And we've got a left winger in Elliot Freer as well, so although he's really only featured, sorry, I don't know if he featured up in Ross County actually, but he featured, you know, against Rangers, not at all today. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays, and hopefully, as I say, he can balance out our midfield and that left-hand side as well.
Jay, just in a final note for the podcast, I think it was quite a strange one in the sense that we talk about the Project Brave thing, particularly when Alan Burrows was on, the points earned from loaning out players. We seem to have quite an abundance of central midfielders. In particular, Alan Campbell was mentioned before the Ross County game in Mark McGee's pre-match interview. Alan Campbell now seems like fifth, sixth choice central midfielder. It looks like there'll be very limited opportunities for him, given the likes of Keith Lasley, Stephen Pearson, Craig Clay, Lee Lucas, all in front of him. Would you expect that there might be a few emergency loans now come into play to try and get these guys, A, first-team experience at another club, and B, to develop them to be ready, should guys like Lucas, Pearson at the end of their contracts, which will only run till the end of May, June time, depart the club in the summer?
Well, it remains to be seen. I think it's an interesting situation to be in, because I think that although we were going through the season with the sugar to shite, kind of inconsistency happening, and there was big questions over, you know, where are we going to end up in a relegation battle, etc. I think the one kind of positive that you always had was the young guys getting their chance and going along to Fir Park and wondering whether it was going to be, you know, McLean or Campbell or McMillan or Ferguson getting the nod, and we do seem to be moving away from that. Hopefully not too much. As Buster said earlier, we are in a situation where perhaps the likes of Clay and Lucas maybe aren't good enough. It remains to be seen. I tend to agree a little bit with Buster in that I think Clay has been decent. He is a typical does-a-job player. Often those are the kind of guys who you know, fly under the radar and are considered maybe a bit anonymous. Lucas has looked good in flashes, but again, yeah, I thought he was, you know, a little bit anonymous when he, you know, was involved today. Would I prefer to see somebody like Campbell given the nod ahead of those guys? I think I would. That is part and parcel of going to Motherwell games, I think. You know, you get that kind of a bit of excitement and a bit more interest when even when things aren't going your way, when you know you're going to go and see a young player. But on the same, you know, with the same regard, I think Stevie Craigan's done a fantastic job with the under-20s. You know, they're doing well in the league. They're looking to retain the cup. So I'm sure guys like Campbell, McLean when he gets back from injury, Ferguson, if these guys aren't to be involved in the first team, I'm sure they'll have enough on their plate in terms of the youth side to have something to at least focus on and to see the chance of still finishing the season, you know, very successfully. And maybe next season, then they might get more game time. But I do agree, I think that we do seem to have went a wee bit over the top with signing central midfielders. And it remains to be seen how that pans out, because at the end of the day, unless we're going to implement some sort of rotation system, you are going to either end up with young players not getting the opportunity and or so-called first-team squad players you know, getting a bit irritated that they're not getting game time, which particularly, you know, for me, isn't a good position to be in, because you know, you want guys who can come off the bench and maybe change things if it's not going your way. So if you're going to freeze people out the team, which we've done in the past with Lionel Ainsworth, and lo and behold, he made appearance today, I think that, you know, it can't be good to be Craig Clay, as anonymous as he might have been, as Buster said. I think that you're going to be looking at that thinking, well, wait a minute, you know, I've been practically a first-choice pick under McGee, and now suddenly I might not see action to the end of the season. I think that as good a player Pearson is, I think it should have been perhaps him or Lee Lucas on reflection. But it remains to be seen. If Alan Campbell's doing well and he is given an opportunity, it will be up to him to hold his position. And you'd like to think that if he does well enough, then he should do so regardless and who's on the bench.
Yeah, just a final note. We'll wrap up with Off-Air 2 now on sale for pre-orders. Unlike the last time, we'll only be making as many copies as we do have pre-orders, so after the book is released there will be no more made. That's an absolute given the last time that I basically had to have a fire sale to have space to put up the Christmas tree. This is not going to be the case this year. We've got a host of brilliant names to be interviewed, a few more still to come. Yesterday I spoke to Alex McLeish, who, despite perhaps not being the most popular figure at Fir Park in terms of his time as manager, he certainly gave a fantastic interview and some brilliant stories regarding his time at the club. At the same price, £8 a copy, all money going to Imogen's Dream charity. Please, if you can, spare £8, buy a copy. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. It'll be, if not better than the first one, it'll certainly be just as good. So something to look forward to there. Guys, thank you very much for your time tonight.
Cheers.
No bother, thank you.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back prior to the Aberdeen game next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Yeah, how you end the fist? If it was your hug, yeah, from me.